What's up, guys? Welcome back. Another episode of Push Through Today, a co-host. So there's three of us. Three's a party. You'll learn about him in the episode, so we won't bore your time with listing all of his accolades, but super pumped to have him on. Super pumped to talk about him because as an old guy like me, it's nice to see young guys out there just crushing it and literally like taking chances with their own future, which I know a lot of our listeners definitely want to hear and has some products, some opportunities, and just, I think you'll leave the episode thinking like, wow, you know, if a guy like this can do it, seems like a pretty regular guy, then I could do it too. Jeremy Miller, thanks for hopping on the podcast with us today.
I love that. Thanks for having me on, man. I'm definitely a very, very regular guy. So I love that intro.
As a guy that has a podcast, is it weird being on the other side? Cause you know, you have a pretty popular podcast as well.
Dude, it's very different. I think I definitely prefer being a host just cause like, I just have to ask the questions and show interest. I don't have to be the one to like provide the value. It's a little bit more pressure, I feel like.
We'll start with like you're based out of Texas, Austin, but you're not from there. And JJ and I, we both have moved far away from home, so I think we can kind of relate to like that stress and that fear of like taking a leap. What brought, especially like Wyoming, being a city slicker like me, I didn't even know Wyoming was a real place until I was in college. Like, how do you make a jump from, especially at a young age too? Because, you know, you're right in a position where you could have probably stayed home with mom and dad, done that whole deal, and you pretty much took a leap and went all the way south. How do you go from Wyoming to Texas, and how do you choose Austin, which is like such a huge hotbed for creators and just entrepreneurs and people trying to take that, you know, bull by the horns?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want the long version or the short version?
whatever you want, dude.
Whatever you're into, bro.
Yeah, so I grew up in Wyoming. There's actually a meme about Wyoming that it's like Wyoming isn't real. Everybody wears t-shirts up there that says that. I don't know if it's somebody in Wyoming that created it to try and like keep people out or what, but it's, you know, the least populated state. So nobody ever knows anybody from Wyoming, but it's a cool place to grow up in for sure. A lot of open space, hunting, fishing, outdoors kind of stuff. I played sports growing up. So it was a great place to grow up for sure. But for what I wanted to do with media content creation, it just wasn't a great place for that because there's just not a lot of that around there. And so in college, I went to the University of Wyoming. My junior year, my fiance now, girlfriend at the time, Bree, we did an exchange program over in Hawaii, which was just, that was a life-changing experience. We had this opportunity pop up that we could go essentially live in Hawaii, go to school, but we would get like in-state tuition there for a year. So it was affordable, which was amazing because normally Hawaii is obviously crazy expensive. So we lived there for a year. And while we were over there, that just gave us the bug to get out of Wyoming and travel and see more of the world. Cause that was our first time getting out of Wyoming, out of our hometown and seeing something else. And it just opened our eyes to all the possibilities that were out there versus this little tiny 50,000 people hometown that we grew up in. And at that same time, that's when I started a YouTube channel. I don't even want to talk about those early videos cause they were so, so bad.
We both get it, dude. We're both YouTubers.
those videos are so cringy. Like, didn't know how to talk on camera. Didn't know how to even like hold the camera. It was just the most awkward thing you've ever seen. But just kept putting in the reps and got obsessed with it. And so we put out a weekly YouTube video, you know, going to the beach, going on hikes, going to new restaurants and stuff, just exploring Hawaii. And then my friends and family back home were like, hey, when you get back to Wyoming, you can do my wedding or you can film a commercial for my business. And so it kind of transitioned really organically from doing like content for ourselves on YouTube, just experimenting, into turning it into a career, which is cool. So I did wedding videos, real estate videos, just the whole freelance thing for a few years, and learned kind of the business side of things. That was like my first experience as an entrepreneur, learning how to sell myself to a client, trying to acquire clients, how to negotiate prices, all these different things that go into running a business. Obviously, it's a lot easier when it's just me as the sole person in the business. But I learned a lot through that and learned that there's just so much more freedom that comes with entrepreneurship, and that I don't think I could ever go back to a 9-to-5 job. I could never be an employee for somebody because I got a little taste of that freedom from entrepreneurship. And from that moment, I was like, okay, I want to go into this. I don't know if, you know, real estate and weddings are what I want to do forever, but I know that at least it's a path I can take for now to get me to that freedom that comes with owning your own business.
Did you go to school for like entrepreneurship, marketing, business, or anything like that? Or was it? Yeah,
that's what I was going to ask. Like, was content creation and stuff your path when you were in college, or did you start that in Hawaii? And by the way, what island were you on?
We lived on Oahu, so we were in like downtown Honolulu. It's beautiful over there. But no, my undergrad in college was political science with the intention of going to law school, really for no other reason that like my parents thought it was a good idea, because I never really knew what I wanted to do. I didn't have any real passions. I've always played sports. I've always loved being active and stuff, but I was never like the best. So I knew I wasn't going to be able to play professionally or go to college and play sports. I always loved it. But in the back of my mind, I was always like, I think it'd be so cool to be able to do something active for a career, but I could never figure out what that thing would be. And then I think I got the first GoPro is what initially got me into content creation. It was like the GoPro 3 or something like that. And I just made these really dumb videos just on iMovie, just trying to figure out how to edit. And they were just the simplest videos with music and clips cut together. But that process of like going out, shooting something and trying to find interesting things to shoot and like being creative with it, I thought that was so cool. And then that kind of transitioned into the YouTube channel where it was more vlog style. But yeah, it initially started with a GoPro and iMovie when I was like 15, 16 in high school. I kind of just did it inconsistently and always had a passion for it, but never considered doing it for money.
Were there certain, so funny thing is my wife and I did the same thing. We lived out in Hawaii for a year. She did travel nursing, and that's kind of where I caught the content bug as well. Were there YouTubers that you were watching first that kind of got you like, oh, maybe I could try to do this as well? Or you already had the bug itself and you were starting to film things already?
Yeah, I think Casey Neistat was definitely the biggest one. Everybody knows Jay, Casey.
This guy is your clone. I'm telling you.
I know, right?
Jeremy, every time you talk, it's like exactly like what Jay, it's crazy. Like,
that's funny.
From a small town in Missouri, out mm-hmm. to Hawaii with his wife, learned it, came back home, decided it. I'm telling you guys have very parallel stories. Mm-hmm. It's awesome to see that like parallelism, if that's even a freaking word. But I think the first place that I saw you, Jeremy, was on YouTube, but it wasn't a video about yourself. Did you filmed like a short documentary on somebody maybe doing an FKT attempt or something like that? I feel like that's the first place that I saw you, and I love that. And I started watching it, and then I was like, I went back to watch it again after I started following you, and I was like, wait, Jeremy produced this short film? Like, because you were like nowhere in the video. Like, how did you pick that up? Because as a talking head YouTube channel, you see my studio. Like, this is where I sit. I even with the running stuff now, getting outside and like trying to take B-roll and stuff, it's a whole nother level of YouTube.
It is.
So it's like the nerves of like taking on a small film like that, especially with a poli sci degree. Like, well. Yeah. Did they contact you and say, hey, I'm going to film, I want to try this FKT and I'm going to do this? Or did you contact them? How did that get all set up?
Yeah, so it was actually a friend of mine that I grew up with in Wyoming. He's okay. A little bit older than me, but I knew he ran ultras. He did 100 milers and stuff. And I started getting more into running. This was 2020, like early 2020, I believe. And I was just sitting on my couch watching ultra marathon documentaries on YouTube. I was like, dude, this would be so cool to be able to put one of these together. And so I texted my friend. I was like, dude, I know you run 100 milers. Do you have any races coming up? I'd love to come out and film one. He's like, yeah, I have four this year. It's called the Grand Slam. So it's the four oldest 100 milers in the country. And they put it into this series called the Grand Slam. And I was like, dude, let's just film all four of them. Why not? And so we put it into, I think it's like a 54-minute documentary on YouTube. And it was like, there was no brands involved. He got some like free gear from brands. That was it. But like, no money was made in it. I just paid for myself to travel around the country to these four races and film him. You know, spent hours and hours and hours editing this thing, and it was just a pure passion project. And then it just blew up on YouTube. I think it's at like 550,000 views or something, which is crazy. Because I mean, my channel when I posted it had like 1,000 subscribers or something. And so, for a channel that size to get 500,000 views is pretty incredible. Yeah, and I think that video kind of gave me a lot of confidence, like, oh wow, if I want to actually pursue this media thing and create content for a living, like people are hungry for it, especially within the running space. And that kind of got me hooked into, I don't know if you guys are familiar with BPN or Nick Bear at all, but when I was actually in the middle of filming that, his team and him were running one of the races in Leadville, Colorado. And that got me hooked in with them. And so I went and worked for them for about 6-8 months, just learning what it's like to grow a business and a personal brand like he has, because he's got, I think, 1 million YouTube subscribers now and 1 million Instagram followers. And so I did all of his personal content for a little bit. That was last year. And then, yeah, it got to the point where I was just like, I could do this for myself. And it was a very short stint because I kind of just treated it as a learning experience of go learn from somebody who's doing what I want to do and then apply it to my own situation. So that was a very fast way to kind of go through that. But
that's how you ended up in Austin, was going to BPN?
Yep. Yeah. So I moved out here early 2022 to work for them and then left in early August of last year. So about 14 months ago, a little bit over a year ago, I went back to being on my own.
I didn't even think about like the wife piece. Like, it's one thing to get up and move across the country, but it sounds like you didn't have to talk her into it that much. Like, you were pretty, what does she do for work? Was she able to just pick up and move? Yeah, Jay, what's up?
I want to say congrats on the engagement, by the way. I saw that not too long ago.
Being married is the shit, man.
It's awesome, man.
You're talking to two guys that are obsessed with being married, especially we married up. So
we did.
It's really, really nice. But like, did you have to talk her into it, or was she like on board 100%? Let's go to Austin. Let's do this.
Yeah, she's been super, super supportive the whole way, which was cool. Because I'll backtrack a little bit. From we went from Hawaii or Wyoming to Hawaii, lived there for a year, went back to Wyoming to finish school. And then we moved out to North Carolina for about a year, just for the sake of moving across the country. Because we both had that bug of, all right, let's get out of Wyoming. Heard North Carolina was cool, so we moved out there. And then checked out South Carolina for a year. And then that's when we came to Austin. But so we at that point, before we came to Austin, we're kind of used to moving around a little bit. And that, I would say that's like our for sure, like our common thread between Bree and me is that like desire to travel and explore and see new places. And so it really has never been a struggle to like, hey, we're going to move back across the country to Texas now. And she's always just been super, super supportive, which has been cool. And she's been in school throughout all of it. So it's all remote nowadays for the most part. So that makes it a little bit easier too.
Perfect. So let me get back to like working with Nick Bear and all that stuff. Were you into running before that? Or is that kind of what got the bug for you to start running? Or when did that start happening?
Yeah, I started running in 2018. It was while we were in Hawaii, actually. I had heard, at the time, my family was like going through some stuff. My parents were going through this like nasty divorce. And it was just like, it was hard, like mentally, I think. And at the same time, I heard David Goggins for the first time on Joe Rogan's podcast. And if you guys have heard Goggins and his story, I related so much to it because he had like didn't have a great relationship with his dad and had this like kind of terrible family life. It, definitely way worse than anything I had, but it just resonated with me. And I was at that point in my life where I was ready to like do something else because I was just trying to find what my passion was. And he talked about with his story how running and endurance sports really helped him get through a lot of that and like gave him a fuel to like keep going and find this passion. And so I started running just a mile a day. The whole first year of running, I think I did like, I tried to PR my mile every single day for the first year. Like I had no clue what I was doing. I was just like, the only baseline knowledge I knew of running was that I did like a 7:30 mile in seventh grade. And I was like, okay, if I can at least do that every day, I should be good. That was obviously a terrible strategy and I plateaued pretty quickly. And then I realized if I want to run further, I'm going to have to slow down a little bit, learn more about running. And so I kind of got obsessed with it around that time. So like 2019 ish. And then when I filmed that documentary in 2020, that really gave me the bug to like, okay, seeing somebody run 100 miles four times in a summer, I was like, I could go do this if I want to. So yeah, all these different experiences kind of came together to now doing content creation with running. And it's just, you know, the culmination of these different experiences.
What's the major difference you've seen between YouTube and Instagram? Cause I mean, you started with YouTube. Your Instagram is, I think you have like 125,000 followers on Instagram, maybe like 25 on YouTube. So as far as like follower counts and stuff, you've been a little bit more successful on that end on Instagram. How do you leverage both platforms? And like, do you have like a favorite? Because, you know, as somebody, I never wanted to really go on Instagram. I always thought like, I'm a YouTuber. And I don't need Instagram, or I'll try and maybe do a little bit of Instagram to help the YouTube channel. But then once I found out that they're completely separate entities, they're social media networks, but they can be used for leveraging completely different opportunities. Did you, cause I think the first video I saw of yours was like one of yours, like what I eat in a day. You've done a bunch of those and they always did really well for you. But what was that switch from YouTube to Instagram and growing that platform? Like what was the mindset there?
Yeah, it's definitely very, very different. Just that short form content in general is so different. It requires a different mindset. In my opinion, I think the short form stuff is easier. Like it's a lot easier to get 100,000 people to watch a 30-second video than it is, you know, even 10,000 people to watch a 20-minute video on YouTube. I think it's a lot harder because it's such a short amount of time that you have to fill. So it's just easier, in my opinion. And you can pump out the content a lot quicker. So last August, it was like right around the time I was leaving BPN, I started posting every single day on Instagram. I just made the decision. I was like, all right, I want to grow my personal brand. Let's just start posting every single day. Cause I could see that consistency was one of the biggest things for the short form stuff. And so, that was like last August, I think I had about 3,000 Instagram followers at the time.
Wow. So that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So from August to November now, 14 months roughly, or whatever that would be, it's gone like, what is that? Like 30X or something like that to 130,000 followers. So I think it was just that consistency and trying to provide as much value as I could as well. Like, and that 30 to 60 seconds you have on Instagram, like how much value can you provide to somebody so that they can watch that video and leave with some piece of knowledge? And I think that's the cool thing with the short form stuff too, is it, one video can be one singular topic. Whereas with YouTube, you can take one topic, but you got to draw it out and you have more time with it, which is nice. But Instagram, it's just so much more surface level, I think. And I like to think of it as this big funnel where you use the short form stuff, YouTube Shorts, Instagram, TikTok, whatever, to, you know, you can hit a really wide audience and grab a whole bunch of people, and then you slowly funnel them into that long form stuff like a podcast or YouTube. YouTube is definitely a much bigger investment of time and energy, I think. But because of that, I think you have a lot higher engagement rate with the people that are watching it. I think personally now what I've come to find is I'd rather have a really engaged YouTube audience of like 10,000 people versus a semi-engaged audience on Instagram of like 100,000.
Can you talk like to people? I think growing a social media platform, whatever it is a lot like running. You mentioned the consistency, but also too that, and from maybe you didn't have this experience, but I know Jay and I have, where, you know, one video will do good and then you see the followers come and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to have a billion followers in a day. And then it drops off for 3 weeks and you don't know, like you start to think like, this is luck, or like that was, I did that reel in 2 seconds. It was like, I didn't feel well, and boom, it gets a million views. And then one that I thought out, I scripted, I planned, it gets 100 views. Like, explain to people what it's like, especially growing to, like, I'm sure you had bouts where like, boom, you picked up 20,000 followers in a month and then you got 400 in the next couple of weeks. How do you ride through those like peaks and valleys of growth? And how does that kind of like, you're a zone two guy. I know like you like low heart rate too, but like that low, slow consistency and dealing with the bad days as well as the good days, you have to have that thick skin if you want to grow a platform.
Yeah, 100%. That's a good way of putting it. It's like zone two training. It's like, not every day is going to be glamorous. You're not going to go set a new PR every day, but just show up consistently on a consistent basis. And I think that's the key to it. As far as, I mean, in my experience, that goes for anything, whether it's a business or relationship or an Instagram account. But yeah, there's definitely ebbs and flows for sure. And I think one thing I found too is to not, and a lot of people do it, and it might work for them, but for me, not chasing like the trends, like the trending audio on Instagram is so popular. And I'll do it occasionally, maybe like a couple times a month, just if I'm like, you know, sparse for content that day, I might throw something out there like that. But what I find with the trending stuff is like, it might get a ton of views, but there's hardly any return on like the engagement or the following, because it's going to push out to a ton of people. But it's so surface level, because you're not really providing much value in that type of content. Whereas if you consistently provide some value, like, hey, this is how I fuel for my 20-mile run, and then tomorrow is how I recover from my 20-mile run, and then the next day is, this is how I train legs after I do a long run, or whatever it is, it's like trying to provide value consistently. That's what I think keeps people around for longer. And that's where that slower, more organic growth can come in. Cause it's like, once you get somebody on your page and you consistently provide value after that, then they're going to stick around for a longer period of time, because they're always getting something out of it, versus just like, they see one of your trending videos, it might have been funny or entertaining, but then that's all they're ever going to see from you.
I can speak 100% to that, because as somebody with I just hit 1,000 followers, I am on the trending audio because it feels so good psychologically when it does pump. But like, yeah, like for me, I have 900 followers, and if I have a really good reel, it'll get like 5,000 views. And I'm like, oh my God. But then you look and I got 2 followers from it. There's 3 comments and like 10 likes. And that's exactly what you're saying. Like, And we saw that same thing on YouTube. We called it evergreen content on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Like build the stuff that people are going to Google a long time over trends. We came from the personal finance space and we would make videos that were like in the times, like here's what's popping in the news. Here's what stock is tanking here. And like they would do great for like a week, but then they would sit on our channels and not create any sort of feedback. But when we created videos on like how to set up a retirement account, how to do this, or what is an index fund? Like we found like that a lot more evergreen content. And that's that. Yeah, that's a great point. And as some, I'm still giddy about trending audio because I'm still loving that. Like, oh, look at how many views, but you're so correct. And I want people to really hear that again, that growing a slow, more organic audience is definitely going to be more beneficial in the long run.
I was going to say it takes more patience, which is the hard part. It's definitely more discipline. Because like you said, it's easy to just, I mean, I've seen videos where it's like a 6-second video of somebody just sitting at their computer drinking coffee, but they put a trending sound on it and the algorithm picks it up for whatever reason. And it's like, yeah, you got 3 million views, but like, are you providing any value to anybody? Is anybody going to actually engage with your stuff? Like, yeah, they might see you and maybe click on your page or something. You might get some followers out of it. And again, this is just from my experience. Maybe it works for other people. I don't know. But I just to reiterate what you said, that slow organic growth with providing value and information is for me, what's been the biggest thing.
So one thing I always talk to people about when it's about social media and whatnot is the power behind a personal brand. Like when you have followers that trust you, you're a trustworthy person, you're real in front of the camera. And I feel like people can pick up on that pretty easy. I mean, just talking to you right now, I mean, you're the exact same guy that I see on Instagram. And that means a lot as a content creator, but also as a follower. But the cool part about social media is growing a business. And I feel like there's this new age coming where, you know, 20 years ago, when you go to build a business, you need money to start up, you need money for marketing, you need money for all this, to where a lot of guys on social media now are able to start businesses and they are able to use that growth to help start a business. And I mean, you've done that. I've done that myself in the finance space. It's a powerful, powerful way that I think a lot of people don't understand yet. Is having that personal brand and being able to grow something that you may have never been able to do without, you know, the power of social media.
Yeah, like, 100%. Didn't you start with like, you have a fitness app too, right? Like when, like you're a hybrid athlete, you're not just a CrossFitter, you're not just a runner. And we'll talk about your running career in a little bit, but you had like the fitness app that was kind of like, was that the first personal brand that you created?
I believe so. Outside of like, you know, just making content, I think that fitness app was, I want to say it was, yeah. I used this platform called Everfit. It's basically have like the framework to build fitness programs and, you know, add like recipes and nutrition guides and all this stuff. And so I just used that to create my own hub for people basically to go on there and get strength training programs, running programs, nutrition guidance, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that was kind of the first taste of that. And the software and like, you know, PDFs, all that stuff is so much easier to sell to like an online audience because, you know, they're already on their phones, obviously. I don't have to fulfill an item or a product physically. And the ROI is essentially 100%, which is pretty cool.
Speaking of fulfilling items, I want to move on to your newest endeavor, which I think is probably only like 3 or 4 months old. But I want to start surface level because JJ and I, we are great friends, but we're also business partners. And there has to be a separation of that. And for what you're doing right now with Switchback, you brought on a partner who I assume was a friend of yours. Could you talk before we get into Switchback and exactly what it is? Let's talk about like building a friendship into a partnership and how you got hooked up with Brock, things like that. And whose idea was it to say, yo, like, I think we should get together and maybe like make a brand. Did you know it was going to be electrolytes? Like, I think the inner workings and the foundations of business is what you don't always hear about, because I'm sure there was some dark conversations there that you had with him. Like, what's that whole process like of finding a business partner? Should you do it alone? You know, should you bring in a friend? Like, what's that really like?
Yeah. So he started following me on Instagram. He actually saw my Chasing 400, that ultramarathon documentary on YouTube. So he saw that, found my YouTube channel, started following me there, and then followed me on Instagram. This was probably a year and a half ago, invited me on his podcast last like end of 2022. And we just stayed in touch ever since. And he lives up in Colorado Springs now. And he had started a gym out in Virginia. He's young. He's 22, 23 years old. Started a gym during COVID, sold that with his wife, and then moved out to Colorado Springs. So he already had some entrepreneur background, which was cool. And I knew he had like that business mindset. And just stayed in touch, connected on a lot of things as far as fitness and running. He used to be a bodybuilder. Now he's into running and ultras and stuff. So we had just a lot in common. And yeah, just would text all the time, Instagram message. Didn't even ever actually meet him until right before we launched Switchback. I was like, maybe I should go up to Colorado Springs and make sure this guy's not like catfishing me. But I mean, you know, it's like through Zoom calls and Google Meets and stuff, you can actually get to know somebody pretty well. And yeah, so we started building this business. Well, our initial business idea was this like AI running app, where it was like a training coach, but for running, where it like interpret your data and all this stuff. We got kind of to the point where we knew the next steps, but we're like, man, we're just not smart enough for this kind of thing. Neither one of us had programming or app experience. And it was a cool idea, but it was going to take a lot of bandwidth, I think. And maybe in the future we'll use that. But we're like, okay, what's like maybe something a little more simple we could start with now that like we both would be passionate about, that we feel like there's a need for. And that was electrolytes and hydration, because especially through like all my content, I talk a lot about how I fuel and my nutrition, and I'm using all these different products. And the number one thing that I talked about for the most part was electrolytes and hydration. And everybody was asking me like, when are you going to come out with your own electrolytes? And I was like, I would love to. I just don't know what that would look like or how much it's going to cost, all this stuff. And so Brock and I started exploring that idea some more. And we're like, man, there's actually like a pretty like big gap that could be filled in the market too. Because there's a lot of, not really, there's only a couple high quality electrolyte products like Element or like Redmond Relight. They're solid products, but there's no brand or community behind them. It's just a good product. And you know, you buy it online and that's it. And then on the other side of that, there's some like mediocre products that have a lot of sugar or are not dosed very well, but they have strong communities behind them or strong brand. And we're like, what if we just, you know, created an electrolyte that's high quality, a great product, but we provide that community and branding with it too. And so we had the idea for Switchback. That's the slogan is Farther Together, really leaning into that community side of things. And we really like to just lead with it as it's a community brand. So we do a lot of community events, group runs, all this stuff. A lot of it here in Austin, just getting people together in person and then fueling all those events with a high quality electrolyte. It was definitely tough at first trying to start a business with somebody remotely who lives halfway across the country. But again, I think through FaceTime and Google Meet and you know, voice messages and things like that, you can really get a lot done. And even now, like I still live in Texas, he lives in Colorado Springs, and we've been in business for 3 or 4 months now, and it's been doing really well. So it's cool that you don't even have to be in person face to face with somebody to start a business.
How do you establish the roles of the business? Like even this podcast for JJ and I is a business. I know what boxes I need to check every day. He knows what boxes he has to check. I know that you do a lot of the fulfillments out of your place. Like, did you guys have that conversation early on knowing that certain tasks were going to pop up, or did certain tasks pop up and you were like, hey, I can handle that with my schedule. You can handle this. Like, because I think it's very important if people are going to start a business, you got to know those roles early on to avoid conflict down the line. Like there needs to be so much communication. How did you guys handle that early on?
Yeah. Yeah. That's it took a little bit. I think more than anything, we just kind of decided based on like our inherent personalities that we have. Like he's definitely more of like the administrative, the more CEO type of role. Like, all right, let's keep, you know, pushing this direction. We should take the company this way. Just because that's his prior experience with starting a gym and, you know, doing all the back end side of things. And then my experience is more in like content creation, the marketing, the like face-to-face community aspects side of things. And so I would say, yeah, he's more like the CEO kind of role. And I'm more maybe like, you know, chief marketing, CMO, chief creative, CMO. And then I also do the fulfillment here. We're looking to outsource that soon, because the fulfillment at first it was really exciting. I was like, oh, I got all these orders coming in. I get to pack them up. And it's cool to see all the names come in, but it's just like not a great use of my time, obviously, because it's a very easy thing to outsource. So that'll probably be the next thing that we do, just because it frees up my time to work on other things in the business. But yeah, I think a lot of it came down to just like our inherent personalities and what our prior experiences were with things.
What gives you the confidence to start something like that, like an electrolyte company? Because most people, like they have the idea in their head, or they're like, oh, this would be so cool to do that, but no one ever executes on anything. What was that like? Was there a tipping point, or you just woke up one day, you're like, oh, let's do this thing, let's go? I mean, what gave you that confidence to actually start Switchback?
That's a good question. I think, like what you were saying earlier about having a personal brand and an audience that trusts you, I think that gave me the confidence. Like, if I would have tried to start this thing a year ago before I had any kind of online presence, I would have had zero confidence. And I don't know if I ever would have actually gone through with it. But because I had that audience that I knew was engaged, and I think a lot of the motivation for starting our own product-based business too was like, I was doing a lot of brand deals for other companies, like different electrolyte brands or gels or shoe companies, whatever it was. And I still do some of those, but it just felt like too much, where I felt like my page was becoming like this billboard almost for all these different companies. And I was like, I don't want to just be, you know, that guy that's all he talks about is this brand and this product and all this and this, especially if it's not mine, because it seems less genuine, because they know I'm getting paid for it. And it's a brand deal essentially. And so I was like, I feel like it'd be a much easier sell to people if they knew it was my brand. And we leaned into it being our brand. And it's like, I think it was The Rock, like, sold his tequila company for like $6 billion or something. It's not like his tequila is superior necessarily. It's just like, it's The Rock. Everybody loves him. He's relatable. They want to support him. They know it's his brand. So he put his name on it and built it up to this huge thing. And it's, you know, that's how Nick built BPN essentially, through YouTube. Is like, it's Bear Performance Nutrition. It's his supplements. It's his brand. There's a million examples out there. And this like creator economy type of thing. And I think that's what gave me a lot of confidence, was knowing that I have this audience who trusts me, and I could see the metrics from, you know, these other brand deals I was doing. Like, they're actually engaged. If I say I use this product consistently, they'll buy it and they can use my code. So using that as confidence, I think helped a lot. And that is really, I think, what's made it successful to this point too, is that organic growth. Cause we spend zero on marketing. It's been 100% organic so far, which has been amazing. It was a really good launching pad to get some funds back into the business and just continue reinvesting. So then we can more easily do paid marketing.
It also feels so cool to like have your own brand, like you mentioned, and like, that's the new hoodie, isn't it?
Yeah. For
Switchback.
Yeah, these are coming out next week. Cool. It's so much easier to talk about a brand that's yours.
For sure, dude.
I mean, even just posting an Instagram story or something like, hey, these are my electrolytes.
Yep.
Go buy them. It's like, it's such an easier ask than like, hey, this is some random product that I use, go buy it.
Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I don't even know what I was going to say. It's easier in general.
I was going to say too, is your audience, you know, they want to support you. Yeah. Like, they want to see you do well and everything. So like, it's a lot easier for them to support you through a brand you started, you created, and they're kind of in your corner rooting for you, you know? So it's also cool that way. And then being able to wear your own swag is, I think, one of the coolest things out there. I'm not gonna lie.
Or it's really cool. Like, I remember the first time that, Jeremy, I don't know if you knew this, but I used to own a brewery. And like, it's one thing when your friends and family have it, but like, I remember one time I was out of state. I was in Nashville, and I'm in a bar in Nashville from New York with a New York brewery, and I saw a guy wearing a Dubco hoodie, and my mind was just, it melted. I was like, I went off. Of course, I bought the guy a beer, of course, but like, it was just so weird. I almost had to do a double take. Like, what's it like knowing that your product has gone now beyond your friend? Like, for example, like, your electrolyte, I drank your electrolytes for the New York City Marathon. And I'm sure there was 70,000 people that raced. I'm sure there was other people that were drinking that product. Like, to know that you are, you know, part of somebody's New York City Marathon journey or ultra marathon journey, like, beyond friends and family being like, all right, oh, cool. Yeah.
This is cute. You know,
Jeremy, this new thing out. Like, yeah, I feel like there's like no better feeling than just when it starts to really grow and it grows outside your own reach. Like, when you, like, I think there was really two amazing things I saw when I was starting the brewery. It was like, one, that growth outside of my friends and family, but then the re-up, like when people started coming back, because it's easy for people to try it once, right? But like, when you start seeing people ordering it again and saying like, oh, here's my second batch, or when people start demanding more flavors and things like that, you're like, all right, they didn't just do me the favor because I'm Jeremy Miller and they bought it and that was good enough for them. Like, that re-up is, you're like, okay, I got something going here.
Oh, it's so cool. I think that's my favorite part about all of it, especially I would say just content and like what's like what I've been able to do over the last year is like those in-person interactions with people. Like when I did the Boston Marathon earlier this year, we put out some posts about, hey, we're going to host a shakeout run downtown Boston. And we had no clue how many people were going to show up. There was like 100 people that showed up, and a few of them were like wearing the hats that I made, like custom hats, and like, oh, I love your content, all this stuff. And, you know, going to the expo, like there'd be some random person like, dude, I love your Instagram page, and like ask and get a picture with me. And I had one guy like have me autograph one of my hats that he had bought online. And I'm like, it's the craziest thing to me, because I'm like, I'm just a regular guy. Like I just put stuff on social media. And yeah, I think those in-person interactions are some of my favorite things. And people, you know, sending me DMs like, dude, I used your electrolytes, or I used your training plan to PR my last marathon. And like, that's because it's like when you see numbers on a screen, it's like, okay, this video did 100,000 views, or this, my page has this many followers, whatever it is. It's just like, it's so, there's not a lot of meaning to it.
It's a vanity number.
Exactly. It doesn't mean much. But there, I think when you see those people in person, you're reminded like, oh, those are real people that are engaging and following along and, you know, getting something out of this. So that's, I think at the end of the day, that's like my real motivation is like when I get those in-person interactions from people. I think one of my favorite stories was when we were in Chicago about a month ago for the marathon. This guy from Japan came up to me. He didn't speak very good English. And he was like trying to tell me, he's like, are you Jeremy Miller? And I was like, yeah, what's up, man? He's like, he showed me his phone and he was texting his coach in Japan earlier. He sent him like my Instagram profile. I was like, dude, it'd be so cool if I got to run into this guy today. I saw he just did the marathon. And then he saw me like 2 hours after that in Starbucks. And he like, cause he was shaking and he got a picture with me. And it was so cool. But I was like, dude, it's just me, man. I'm just a regular guy. But it's like so cool to have that impact on people, and whether it's inspiration or a source of knowledge, whatever it is.
I got to cut you off. Hold on. You can't just say I did the marathon, bro.
Yeah, you killed that thing, bro.
You didn't. I just did the New York City Marathon. Like I just went out and did it. You smoked. We'll talk about the running thing, but I do want to back to the community real quick before we get to the running.
I got something I want to say too. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. That the community and that cool down that you guys do, I think it's Tuesday nights in Austin, which I have a buddy in Austin. I keep telling him to go. Did you create that? Or was that like something that you just started showing up to? Because I've joked with you in DMs, like, dude, you're going to need a permit for that soon. Like, you have hundreds of people showing up every single week. Was that something that you created, or you just hopped on board and got involved with?
A little bit of both. So the original cool down run is in Denver. They started it about a year ago. It's just a guy and a girl up in Denver, and they wanted to expand to different cities because their run in Denver has like 300 or 400 people that show up every week. And so they hit me up in Austin. They just found me on Instagram and saw I had like a decent following and seemed like I was pretty well connected here.
Okay.
So they're like, hey, we want to get this run started in Austin. Can you help us get it off the ground? And we won't be able to pay you or anything, but like you can come do our group run basically. And I was like, okay, yeah, why not? So I, this was like in April, I think we started it. The first run was like 10 people that showed up. And then the next week it was like 20, and then it was like 30. And now it's consistently like 150 people. It's been incredible to see that growth. And, I think a lot of it is, I think it definitely helped that I was like pretty well connected here in Austin and have like a little bit of an online following, but just like the word of mouth. And I think it's presented as this like social club, but we're just running at the same time. It's like a super, super social, very laid back kind of run club. And I think that's really appealing to people because a lot of run clubs can get kind of clicky with like elite people, or like you got to know somebody in the club to show up. And so we presented this as like, hey, anybody can come, you can walk if you want to even. And so it's it blew up, which is cool. Yeah, it's still like, I got to hype myself up every Wednesday night because I got to get up and talk in front of like 150 people. And it's like, I think about it, it's so dumb. Like I'll put out an Instagram video where 50,000 people will see it online, but getting up in front of 100 people in person is like nerve wracking. It's the weirdest thing.
That is so very weird. So
in the steps in Chicago, you're like, I don't really know what I'm talking about here.
I'm definitely more of an introvert too. And so getting up, I mean, I don't think anybody thrives with public speaking necessarily unless you've done it a lot, but I don't know. Especially for me, I always have struggled with getting up in front of people and talking. And so it's like, I kind of really get hyped up and like, all right, let's run through this. I'll go through to my car like 80 times just to make sure I don't mess it up. But no, it's cool. And it's like, it's definitely imposter syndrome for sure. Cause it's like, why am I up here talking? Like, I'm not any better than anybody else. Like, I don't know who put me up here, but, I don't know. It's cool. I love the in-person stuff more than anything.
Yeah. I feel like every creator has that imposter syndrome somehow, some way. I feel it all the time, but one thing I love, dude, about the social media and then like the community aspect of this, Brad and I talked about this in our last episode. And so we both come from like the finance background, and now we both made this transition. Like I've completely switched my personal brand to like now the running fitness space. I'm a brand new runner, never ran in my life, but I made a big personal brand switch because I was just kind of over. Finance is still my passion, but it's also running is this newfound passion that I have, and I want to talk about it with everybody. So one thing I figured out is the running community so far on the internet is amazing. The people in there are incredible, uplifting, motivating versus like, you know, the finance community is great too, but like there's a lot of mean people in the finance space. So Brad and I were mentioning this. We're like, dude, we came over to this new area on the internet, this new little corner. And it's just like, everyone's so nice, motivating. Like I know there's guys that are reaching out to me that like, I'm really slow right now. Like I'm just now starting like zone 2 training and all that. And a lot of guys like sending me messages and DMs on like things to like tips and tricks and to work on. I was like, why are you guys doing this? You don't have to do this. Like, oh, we want to see you do well. I'm like, never would have happened. And you know, it's a cool, definitely a cool place to be in. And like you said, with that cool down run, it's awesome to be able to just see people face to face, have those conversations, and it makes it feel a lot better.
I always want to do something like that, but is it hard to commit every week, or like, have you missed I want to do like a group run, but like, I want to get like 5 people involved so that if I need, like sometimes I can't be, especially with small kids and stuff, like I can't commit to that weekly commitment. You know, do you find any stress in that or no?
Yeah, it's challenging some weeks. I've had to miss a few, but we do have a couple other girls who help like co-lead basically. So if I can't be there, then one of them will help. And it's really like, I mean, group runs are usually pretty self-explanatory. It's like, as long as you have one person there that kind of knows the drill, you can get everybody going, which is nice. But it is definitely a commitment. And I mean, I don't have kids, so that's a little bit easier for sure. But no, dude, you should. I would highly recommend it. It's if you get three people to show up, that's better than nothing.
You might have pushed me to start my own little cool down run here, because like I have an awesome 10K trail system right by me. It's super flat, really nice parking lot. Like, and so many people around me do run it. And I just think, you know, there are people that are just waiting for someone to be like, all right, let's get an organized time. Let's do this, you know. And that was tough because now we're heading into winter and, you know, only the killers are out right now. So,
yeah, dude, you should. It's like even on Saturday mornings, sometimes like this last Saturday, I had 10 miles and I was like, I just put it on my Instagram, like, hey, I'm gonna run 10 miles tomorrow. Like just easy pace. Whoever wants to show up can show up. And it was like 8 people. And it was like obviously smaller than the 150 at cool down. But it's like, I don't know. I had a great time just running with those 8 people. They were all people I'd never met before. Most of them didn't know each other prior. And then you leave and you might've made 1 or 2 new friends out of it. And it's like, that's what I think it's all about too. And running, especially, it's like such a cool way to get to interact with people. I kind of lean into your point, JJ, is like it's such a welcoming, encouraging community of like, it doesn't matter if you're an elite runner running like Olympic trials times, or if you're a 6-hour marathon or whatever it is, or if you've never done a marathon, like if you've done a 5K, whatever, that like everybody kind of has this mutual respect for each other, because running is hard no matter how fast you are. It's always going to be challenging. And when you're out for like a 5-10 mile run, and you're more vulnerable, I think, because you're like suffering a little bit, and you're like suffering together in this way. And I think for me, those are some like my best conversations I have with people, because you're so vulnerable and open, and there's nothing else to do because you're just running. And so the only option is to either run in silence or to talk. And I think most people prefer to talk. So yeah, it's such a positive, encouraging community, and especially online too. The running community is just amazing. Like the DMs I get and the comments and everything. It's like, I see some people in other industries, they get so much hate in their comments and stuff. It's like maybe 1%, if that, of negativity. It's just a very positive community, which is cool.
Yeah, no, it's, I want to talk now, like we're definitely going to link all the electrolytes because there's, we have a lot of new runners and stuff like that. And people are definitely going to be interested in checking that out. Two flavors now. You guys going to come out with new flavors? Or?
Yeah, we've got one in the works probably like April. And the next big thing we're working on is the single serve packets. We just have the like 50 serving tubs, which are nice for at home. But obviously if you're traveling or have a race or something, it's a little bit more complicated. So we have those coming. That'll probably be like February or March. But yeah, we have so many things we want to do. It's just a matter of time more than anything.
You have 100K coming up, and you carry yourself so confidently in the running and fitness space. I remember months back before my 100K, like I DM'd you because you, for somebody who probably gets a ton of DMs, like I used to have a really good, really big personal finance YouTube channel and Instagram. So I know that you get a lot, and you are one of those guys that you'll get back to most people, I'm sure. And I asked you something like, hey, what would you do in this case? And you're like, dude, I've never run that far, man. You're going to get there before me. And I'm like thinking to myself, wow, like the confidence that you carry, you've busted out a couple 50 milers. I know Bighorn was, you know, the 50 miler you did this last year. I think you've done that one twice, and that's going to be your first 100, but not putting the cart before the horse. You got 100K coming up. It's going to be your first 100K. What's the growth in the ultra scene and going up? Because I'm the type of person where I want to go from 5K to 100 miler in a year. Like I want to be all in. That's me. Like I'm like, I've done 150K and I'm like, when can I schedule Moab, you know? Or like, when can I be Pierce and just do all the 200s in a year, you know? But you seem to have done it, you know, in a more realistic type of way, and growth, is that just because of your schedule or because you are a hybrid athlete? So you want to make sure that you also spend a lot of time incorporating strength into your routine, and like how far, because if you casually say like, oh, I'm running this 100K, and then you kind of like what you did with Chicago, and then you come out and just smack this thing in 5 hours, I'm like, come on, man, pat yourself on the back a little bit. Like, what are the goals for the 100K? Is it a training run for the 100 miler, or, you know, what are you trying to learn in that run?
Yeah, to answer your first question, I think that's actually something that, like, we're doing a little short kind of documentary thing for the 100K, and I want to really talk about that, like, more slow, methodical approach into the distances, because my very first race I ever did was this like 12-hour endurance challenge in Wyoming through the mountains. And it was just like from 6:30 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. How many miles can you run? And I think at the time I was doing like 10 miles a week, super inconsistent. I'd only been running for like a year at that point. And I was like, let's go run 50 miles. A genius idea without training or anything. And so I went, I think I did like 43 miles or something, which was great at the time. But I was wrecked. I hurt my knee. I couldn't run for like 3 or 4 months afterwards. And so I had that like really aggressive, like kind of Goggins mindset initially. And then I saw like, okay, I just got hurt. Now I can't run at all. I probably could have performed way better than that if I actually trained. And I was like, it was fun, but like, I don't know. It just like, I could have done so much better. And that's where I was like, okay, let's just be a little bit more methodical. So then I went back to the half marathon, did a couple of halves, led that up to my full marathon. I've done, I think, 5 full marathons now. And then went from the full marathon to the 50 milers. So yeah, I've done Bighorn twice. That's a beast of a race. And then, yeah, now the 100K. And I think just like really taking time in between races too, and not going from like, you know, race to race to race within like, you know, just a couple of weeks, or I think giving yourself a good couple months in between each race helps for sure. And having some sort of kind of off season, even though I'm not like an elite athlete, I'm not, you know, training for the Olympics or whatever. It's like, I'm still running these distances, still doing 50 miles or a marathon or whatever. So I want to treat myself and treat my body as if I'm like an elite athlete. So doing it kind of in those stages, I think helps a lot. And I think the strength training is huge too. The strength training, I think, is the biggest thing to reduce your risk of injury, it coupled with just like slower, more methodical training. But yeah, so I strength train 4 to 5 times a week. And I think that's crucial for running.
Didn't your marathon time go down as your weight went up?
Yeah. So my very first marathon, early 2022, I was like 155 pounds. I had the mindset of you got to be smaller, you got to be lighter to run faster. So I didn't strength train at all. I was 155 pounds. I ran 3 hours, which is great for a first marathon for sure. I can't deny that, but I felt like crap. I was always like dealing with these little injuries the whole time. And then now, about 6 weeks ago, when I had Chicago, I'm 170 pounds, so 15 pounds heavier. And then I ran 244. So 16 minutes faster, essentially, while gaining 15 pounds. And again, I think a lot of that is like the strength training and just having that muscle and all that connective tissue built up around your joints and those really common areas where people get injured. That can just prevent injuries, and which allows you to stack on more miles. And obviously, the more miles you put on, the more aerobically fit you are, the more muscle endurance you have. So it's it takes time, and I think that's the hardest part with running, is it just takes a lot of time and patience.
Are you trying to smash this 100K? Because this is going to come out right before you do it. So like, no humble Instagrammer. I want to know, are we going full fucking send on this thing, or are you going out there and taking videos and reels of yourself and enjoying it?
Yeah, I'm going to full send as much as you can for 100K. but I basically, from what I've gathered, do you guys know Zach Bitter at all?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's based here in Austin. He's like the king of flat and fast ultra marathons, like 100 miler specifically. So I've been working with him a little bit. And he's like, you want to essentially be right on your aerobic threshold for the duration of the 100K. So it's a more of a comfortable pace ish, but it's for like 8 hours essentially. So I'm going to be right on that threshold, which for me, I think it's going to be like 7:45 pace roughly for like 7 or 8 hours. So we'll see what happens. I have no idea what'll happen with it, but I mean, Zach's a beast. His 100 mile record is like 11 hours. So it's essentially 4 sub-3 marathons in a row. It's like 6:50 pace for 100 miles.
Jeez. I know he just smashed Javelina too. He is really, he's one of those guys you see on Instagram where it's like, he'll go out for like long, long runs. And yeah, they're all like 6:10, 6:10, 6:10, 6:10.
Yeah.
He's really, really fast.
I just saw some kid crush the 50-mile world record. I think it was last night I saw that. And I saw it was like a 5:45 pace. I was like, how is that even humanly possible?
Yeah, it was like two 25 marathons back to back.
Oh my gosh, yeah, dude.
And like, and you see them. I mean, like, we see the pros and stuff, and they just look like they're in an all out sprint.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like, how do you go full gas like that?
Question for you, Jeremy. So as a guy, new runner, we have a lot of new runners on here too listening. What does your strength training schedule look like? I mean, are you doing like, I'm still trying to figure this out myself, because I had an injury with my knee from trying to ramp up miles too fast, just getting at it too hard, not doing strength training. So I'm doing a 4-day split, and I do like a runner's leg day the first part of the week. I do a push and pull day, and then I do a like more heavier focused leg day towards the end. What does your strength training schedule look like for running?
Yeah, that's actually pretty similar to what I do. So I like to stack my first leg day of the week with whatever day of the week I have a speed workout. Right now, I'm not doing speed workouts because I don't really need it for the 100K, mm-hmm. but during a marathon, I usually do one speed workout a week, and that'll be on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. So I'll do my speed workout in the morning, and then I'll do my leg workout in the evening or afternoon. And the reason for that is like you're already trashing your legs through the speed workout. It's just a lot for your legs. So if you stack on a strength workout, not only does that help with like muscular endurance, but I think it helps with kind of mitigate the soreness overall, instead of like spreading it out throughout the week more. It's like you're just stacking it all in that one day. And if you're going to be sore, you're probably going to be sore-ish from one of those workouts regardless. So you might as well just put them on the same day together. So I do that. That's usually, again, Tuesdays or Wednesdays. And then usually if I just have like a long, easy run on Saturday morning, say it's like 15, 20 miles, then I like to do my leg workout Friday night. So like 5, 6 p.m., I'll do a leg workout and then get up like 12 hours later Saturday morning and go do like a long 2 or 3 hour run. And again, that helps mitigate the soreness. And I also just like the idea of like doing a heavy leg workout and then going to run 20 miles afterwards.
Smart. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So I'll either do that, or I'll kind of flip it and I'll do the long run Saturday morning, and then I'll do the leg workout Saturday afternoon, kind of like how I would do on Tuesdays for the speed work. But yeah, I like to pair them as close together as I can. For me, that's what's worked. I don't really know if there's ever been a study on it, if there's science that says, you know, if that could like confirm that. But for me, that's worked really, really well.
At the end of the day, a lot of this is you got to do what you got to do. And one question I'd have
for you. Hang on. I still got something on that.
Go.
Do you do any upper body strength training as well, or is it all legs?
Yeah, I usually do one pull day and one push day.
Okay.
I always prioritize leg days just for running purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever upper body I can get in is just a bonus. But yeah, I usually hit one push and one pull day a week. Those are a little bit more like bodybuilding style, like a lot of bench press, pull-ups, rows, that kind of stuff. And then the leg stuff too is I try to keep it as functional as possible. I'll still do compound movements. Deadlift is definitely my favorite lift. And then that's the only one I'm good at. So I just lean into that one. And then I'll still back squat or front squat a little bit. But then everything else is pretty much single leg. So like box step ups, Bulgarian split squats, a ton of lunges, forward, reverse, side lunges, sled pulls, sled pushes, anything that's like functional, I try to fit in. Cause it's, if you think about it, running is a single leg activity. You're never on both feet at the same time. So strength training on one leg whenever possible under load, I think that's it's great for stability and your joints and everything.
Do you focus on core at all?
I do, like, as a warm up, I'll do like a few sets of something for core, but I think if you train more functionally, you're kind of always using your core in some way,
for sure, just
kind of as like a byproduct of that. But yeah, I'll do like a quick couple sets of some core just to warm up usually.
You mentioned Zach. What is it like, because you coach athletes as well, what is it like being coached versus coaching? And this is a conversation we have with JJ a lot. I just hired a coach for my 100 miler and I'm always somebody that's always coached. What was like the mindset? I don't know, like if Zach's your official coach or not, or you probably have a coach, whatnot. What's that like, hiring a coach and saying, yeah, I know a lot of stuff. I know how to do a lot of things, but I think a coach can come in and help me in these particular areas.
Yeah, I think everybody should have a coach. I know my coaches also have coaches. So it's like this, and I'm sure their coaches have coaches. So I think it's like that kind of layer. And for me, I think a lot of it is just having that like second opinion on things. And because again, it's like I could write my own program. I do it for other people. So I could do my own program. I could show up and be accountable. I don't really need somebody to keep me accountable necessarily, but I like that like kind of team aspect of it too, because running is such a individual sport. But having a coach, I feel like, makes it feel a little bit more like a team and you're going through it together in that way. And again, I think just having somebody to talk to, like if your knee's bugging you, or if you had to miss a workout and you got to change the program a little bit, like it's just nice to bounce some ideas off of people. Or if you have some crazy idea for how to fuel for a race, or like how I should pace a certain thing, like it's just nice to get that second opinion, I think. And yeah, I always learn something from my coaches that I implement into the people that I coach too, like just because their brains work differently than me, and they might say some random thing someday that resonates really well with me. I'm like, oh, I never thought of it that way. So then I can start implementing that with people that I coach. I strongly encourage everybody to have a coach, no matter how experienced or talented you think you are. I think it's really, really beneficial to have a coach for sure.
With the team aspect, and this is something that like is now on my bucket list, what's it like to pace people? Because from your show, and I know I mentioned Pierce before, who just did all those 200s. I know you got out to pace him at Tahoe. How rewarding and how I want to pace people so badly, especially watching people like you and like watching these influencers that are just rolling in deep to 100 milers, having a grand old time. You were at Leadville having a grand old time. Like, there's a part of me that's almost like, I don't even know if I ever really need to race. I'll be a professional crew and pacer. Like, what's that like?
Yeah, it's from a selfish standpoint, it's a blast, because it's like you don't have to pay the, you know, expensive race entry fee. You get to still go out on the course. You get to see a lot of the course. You get to see the aid stations. You get to be there to support a friend. You know, they're doing a huge goal, so you get to be there to help them along the way. And like, again, that team aspect is huge in ultra training, like, or in ultra running. It's without a good crew. I mean, you could do it without a crew or pacers, but it's like, you know, it's all on you. And it's like when you go to celebrate, it's like, oh, you're just with yourself, right? But if you have a team with you, a crew and pacers and all this, it's like you're celebrating as a team. And I think that's way more fun, in my opinion. I think this summer I paced Tahoe 200. I did like 65 miles with Pierce. I had a friend do, it's called the Crazy Mountain 100 in Montana. That is a wild race. I know Cam Haynes has done that one. So you may have heard of that one from him, but that race is insane. And then Leadville. And I feel like there was maybe another one that might've been it, but no, pacing is fun. It's like you said, I almost feel like I don't need to go run those races myself now. Cause it's like, I got to see so much of the course and I got to experience, you know, the vibes of the race and everything without having to go run 100 miles, essentially.
You paced Colin out at the Crazy Mountain, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Do you have a bucket list race, like an end goal?
I think I have a lot. I think Hard Rock would be cool. The Hard Rock 100 in Colorado. I would definitely want to do like Western States. I would love to do Leadville. I think Hard Rock is probably for a lot of people kind of a bucket list thing. And I know the UTMB over in Chamonix, France.
Yeah, it'd be so sick.
That one looks incredible. We got to visit Switzerland a year ago. I think that was a year ago. And just that whole part of the country or the world of Europe is so epic. So I couldn't imagine running. I think that race is like 118 miles or something. Yeah, it's beautiful over there.
I wish they weren't shooting themselves in the foot with like what's going on, all the controversy around. Cause like, yeah, I want to love that race, but then it's something like I started off, my endurance background is in triathlon. So I remember when Ironman kind of did that. And then when Ironman bought UTMB, I'm like, I left triathlon to get away from Ironman. And now here we're dealing with the same stuff, but I love like the Aravipa races and things like that. I can't wait to, you know, do a lot more of those. Being on the East Coast, I don't have like that access. Like I hear about all these big races and I'm like, man, I'd have to fly for every single one and go to all these. And yeah, there's so many bucket lists for different reasons. Like, right, you want to do Hard Rock for different reasons than you want to do Leadville. Like you want to take on Hope's Pass twice, but then you want to take on Hard Rock because it's so iconic and so impossible to get into. And like, even down to like the loop races where the backyard ultras, like I just saw Harvey do that. And I'm like, damn, I want to do a backyard ultra and I want to do those things. And it's just never ending.
Yeah. The backyard stuff is crazy. And yeah, that's a good point. Like the UTMB thing is interesting. Cause like if you go to any ultra, it's such a like ma and pa, like hometown kind of feel. Like it's a lot of it's just kind of just rigged together. Cause it's like ultra running in the US is so new still. And I think that's part of the fun of it is, go run like a marathon, like Boston or something. It's so commercialized and really well put together, which is great. But like the ultra scene is so, so unique in that it's just like kind of people like, hey, we have this state park in our little hometown. Like we can maybe run 100 miles around it or something. It's like, it's all kind of just like rigged together. And I think it's so cool because of that. Like that's how kind of, I think Brazos Bend is that I'm doing in a few weeks is, it's like, you know, a couple hundred runners is all. It's pretty small, just in this little state park. And it's like not this big production, which I think is cool.
Yeah, man, I value your time so much. We are in an hour. So, you know, I know you have other things. You got some training. Actually, you did your training run this morning, I think I saw. But I'm looking forward to seeing you smash that and then go out there to Bighorn and smash that too. One last question before we go. And then if Jay has anything that he wants to. Who do you follow on Instagram? Like, is there anybody that like motivates you or, you know, if that's not your position, like you don't want to point fingers at anybody, but like more selfishly for me, because sometimes all we get is whatever the algorithm's pushing. And I know there's just some amazing people out there doing some crazy things, but as somebody that is a huge Instagrammer, I'm curious, who do huge Instagrammers follow?
That's a good question. I think some of the people I've been following forever is like Cam Haynes, Rich Roll, Andrew Huberman, Chris Williamson. He's doing some really cool stuff lately. Most of the people I follow are either entrepreneurs or like in the health and fitness space in general. I like Jesse Itzler. I love his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, a lot of like entrepreneurs or health and fitness. I don't really follow. I follow a lot of like runners and other runner creators and stuff. But more so just like stay connected with them. But I think I find the most inspiration and like, you know, people that are ahead of me doing bigger and better things. And I want to, you know, look up to them and, you know, take notes from them essentially and see how they do things and how they think. Like, I really wish Steve Jobs was around. I just finished reading his biography from Walter Isaacson. I don't know if either one of you guys have read that, but it's one of the best books I've ever read. And it's so good. And it's so sad that he's passed away. Cause I feel like that guy, especially like in today's world, even, would just be like doing some incredible things. So that's kind of a sad one. I wish, that I could follow now.
Definitely. Jay, you got anything you want to add?
I got one selfish question for you. So as a new runner, do you have like one or two pieces of advice or a tip, as someone who's 5 months into running?
I'll give you more of like a philosophical answer first. And that would just be like, have patience and be consistent. I think if you can show up and take a really slow approach. Like, I don't know what your goals are ultimately, like train for a marathon or 100 mile or whatever, but like set a realistic timeline. Like I like to, I guess this could go into more of a tactical piece of advice, would be like increase your mileage by like 10% every 3 or 4 weeks. What I like to do is, say you're running 20 miles a week right now, do like 20 miles this week, 20 miles the next week, 20 miles the third week. Take a little deload week if you need to, like go down to 10, 15 miles, and then bump up by 10% on that fifth week. So that'd be what, like 22 miles basically. And then 22, 22, 22, deload. And then you go up to like 25, 25, 25, and just really be methodical with it. And I think that consistency and just the patience that that would require, I think that'd be the biggest thing as a whole. You can't fast track running, in my opinion. Like it just takes time, just like a business, just like a relationship. Like if you try and rush into it too quick, you're probably going to get hurt. You're going to overtrain, and you're not gonna be able to run at all. And you're going to probably plateau pretty quickly. So I think just really being slow and methodical and very, very patient with it will not only get you there quicker, as counterintuitive as that sounds, but it will also, I think, create more longevity for you too.
Awesome. Love it.
Jeremy, thanks so much, buddy. I really do appreciate your time and coming on and hanging out with a bunch of guys that are not as big as you, but we're looking to get there. And more importantly, we really want the listener, especially with this brand change that we've made, like to be introduced to you and kind of see where we're getting all of our inspiration from and, you know, the people that we're looking up to. And you definitely are one of those, not to, you know, kiss your ass too much, but no, I appreciate it. I want to follow that journey. And I look forward to like bumping into you at a race or two. And yeah, man.
Speaking of that, you were supposed to do Bighorn, right? Weren't you going to sign up for one of those?
Yeah. So the 52 miler is still on my radar. It's tough with Father's Day. And
right.
I'm actually pretty cool with Cam Haynes' brother, Taylor. And
oh, nice.
He's going out and going to do the crazy mountain out there. So I'd like to maybe go out there and crew with him. And then I've been DMing back and forth with Colin. I know he's going to attack that race. So I think just with the Father's Day weekend, I think I'm going to focus more on getting out to Crazy Mountain and you know, being a part of that community. So we'll see. It's not off the table, the 52 miler at Bighorn. So, unless you're like, hey man, my crew fell through, I need some money, man, I'll fucking be there.
I love like, that.
Cause that's all I want to do. But yeah.
That's awesome. I've considering either, I'm going to try and get into Leadville. If I don't get to Leadville, I think I might do Crazy Mountain. If Bighorn 100 goes good, if it goes to plan, then I'll probably try and do Crazy Mountain too. That race, I would say out of all the ultra courses I've seen, that's probably the most beautiful for sure. It's like so epic.
Which one is that again?
The one I posted in my story the other day, Jay, where it's like trying to explain Crazy Mountain to people. And it's okay, like, okay, go up, then come straight back down, then go up higher, then come straight back down, then go right up higher again. And just repeat that a couple of times. It looks just the course profile looks insane. But I mean, the beauty in that part of the country, which is kind of, you know, what led me to wanting to go and look at even Bighorn, because seeing you guys do that, I know that you and Andy Glaze were talking about all the mud, but you know, it's still like, it looked worth the muddy trip, if anything. So,
oh, Bighorn is super beautiful. I'm biased because I'm from Wyoming, but dude, the mud is relentless. It will literally suck your shoes off your feet.
Wow. Is it always muddy, or was it just like one of those years?
Yeah, it's every year just because it's so early. It's like early June or whatever day it is. And it's the snow doesn't fully melt till like right around that weekend. And so a lot of the snow is melting. It's all running down the mountain. And it's just like, it's a mud fest. It's like borderline one of those like Tough Mud or like Spartan races or something.
All right. You're not selling too many people on Bighorn.
I mean, if you want to do something hard, I mean, it's the one for you.
Touche. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's not off the table for me yet. And like I said, I would definitely like to get out there, but it would be nicer if I can get out there for a day or two, help somebody out, and then know I can be back for Father's Day dinner. Cause that really is important to me. So.
Yeah. I think one last point there too, is I think pacing at ultras gives you a ton of confidence that you can do a 50 miler or 100 miler or whatever distance you're trying to do. Cause when you go out, like when I was pacing Pierce for Tahoe, I think I took him from like mile 135 to the finish. And like the whole time, like I was uncomfortable. I was in pain. I was doing like 60 miles. Right. But I just kept thinking like, dude, he's done 135 miles more than me and he's still going. Like, I think it gives you a lot of confidence. So if you want to eventually do 100 or a longer distance, whatever, go and pace somebody at one of those. And I think that'll help you out a lot.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Thanks for all the insight. And I'm sure we can go on forever, but you got a busy schedule. You got to go sell some more Switchback, man. That's and right. I look forward to those hoodies coming out as well. You know, I always like to pick up the gear.
Okay. We appreciate it, man. Thank you. Thanks for having me on too. This is fun.
Guys, thanks so much for listening. We will leave details to everywhere you can find Jeremy. Like I said, pretty easy name to find, pretty familiar face. You can check this out on YouTube if you want the more video and you want to see all of our facial expressions, I guess. Get a face to the name, if you will. But definitely check out that Chasing 400 doc too. I'll link that because that's how I found you. And, you know, it really, really was a great production and awesome race. So, all right, guys, we'll catch you next time. And thanks so much.